This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, your pop culture home.
Yeah, Frank here has got his own billiard room.
Yes, it's what do you call it, Kramer?
Billiard room.
No, not billiard, not the billiards. It was
billiards room.
Come on already. Come on, we call it the...
The Place to Be.
The Place to Be, yes, the Place to Be.
Then I shall be there.
Now, it's time. Live and in living color.
The Grandy Man can.
Time to play the game!
Well, you always left me satisfied and smiling, so...
That's what she said!
Why do I want this? I want to make bank, bro. I want to get ass. I want to drive a Range Rover.
Place to Be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be Podcast.
Very nice, Mr. Criscola.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dennis.
D'Lo Brown interfered with a frog splash and hit it on Severin, getting some revenge.
I know.
What the hell was it? What was that laugh? It was like an old cartoon fucking Hanna-Barbera dog or something. It was like Snidely? Was that the fucking dog that laughed like that?
JR's got a little more time than I do to sit and actually write a whole show.
This is the third time you said it to me today now. I'm really curious.
Well, I'm not saying that you have nothing to do. I'm just saying
I'm
your
curious
day...
I'm curious how I have more free time than
no,
you.
No, I'm going to...
What does that mean?
I don't know.
I know it's been a rough, and I'm not used to this long, grueling podcast schedule.
Oh, for fuck's sakes. Are you guys just joking off for the next hour?
Fun. Did you say D'Amato, late 20s, 30s?
Big.
And you included yourself in that as well?
I was being nice to him. I am still technically in my 30s.
I think they might hit a shock wall.
What the fuck is a shock wall?
Is that the Shockmaster's wall?
You got to go through the shock wall.
Yeah, I like Big Dick myself. PTB Nation, let me know what
you're
doing.
Here's our opener.
To do worse than Josh Richard.
Please don't shoot up the place. Because I see some ladies tonight that should be having my baby. Baby. Straight up, honey, really, I'm asking. Most of these niggas think they be macking, but they be acting. Who they attracting with that line? What's your name? What's your sign? Soon as he buy that wine, I just creep up from behind and ask you what your interests are. Who you be with? Things to make you smile. What numbers to dial? You gonna be here for a while. I'm gonna call my crew. You gonna call your crew. We can rendezvous at the bar around 2. Plans to leave. Throw the keys to little C's. Pull the truck up front and roll up the next blunt so we can steam on the way to the telephone.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to another great episode of the one and only Place to Be Podcast. I am your co-host, Justin Rosero. Joining me, as always, my PIC, Scott Criscola. Scott, how you doing?
Good evening, JR. Good evening, Place to Be Nation. Welcome to episode 233 of the Place to Be Podcast. And as usual, we have our guest every few weeks. We have unsettled weather. He brings the storm in. And, of course, here in the Northeast, as always in the summertime, maybe a storm, maybe not. Clouds are ominous. They make it sunny. Who the heck knows? But we'll always have a great episode when this gentleman is on. And, JR, let's bring him right in.
The one and only, the voice of Ring of Honor, the one and only Kevin Kelly. Kevin, how you doing?
Hey, I'm good. If I sound a little Skypey tonight, I apologize. I'm a little under the, weather, I guess you could say. It's always something with us. We've had blizzards. We've had storms.
We've had superstorms.
We had Hurricane Sandy. We had RJ Brewer run-ins. We've had a lot of problems on this show.
What was more damaging to our reputation?
I think the RJ Brewer was. Yes.
Let me share with you a tweet that he sent me today from RJ Brewer 1070. It reads just as this. It reads, "At Real Kevin Kelly, God bless Planned Parenthood."
Yes. Jeez.
God.
Let's see. What's the last one he sent me before that? It was... RJ Brewer 1070 on the 29th at Real Kevin Kelly. Yes, we can. You know, I mean, this is the type of stuff that I get from RJ Brewer 1070 on the Twitter. Oh,
and that is stuff you can all get if you follow him as well.
Yes.
All right, Kevin, before we get to the old school WWF 1999 information, we need some current info from you. Fans have demanded we ask, so, you know, we listen to our fans. What is going on with the Briscoe brothers in Ring of Honor?
Well, all I can say is all I can tell everybody here, because I don't want to spoil television for anybody, okay? But some things went down at the TV taping that you will see unfold over the next few weeks on Ring of Honor television. Now, I can tell everyone that both Mark and Jay were injured in their world title match at Best in the World. It may not have been readily apparent to the audience, but it was apparent to all of us afterward. Mark sets Jay up on the table, does the froggy bow through the table with brother on top of it. Mark gets a concussion. Jay re-injures his shoulder and injures his back. He's had a his back has been barking longer than from when he hurt the shoulder back at Chicago, and his back has been bothering him since last year. So anyway, we got those three things. Hooray for main events and hooray for pay-per-views. But anyway, so that's the story with that. Now, what happens after this set of television unfolds for the audience to see? It's unfair to speculate at this point, but there are a lot of questions about both Mark and Jay's future in Ring of Honor. So I think we have to let the episodes of television play out. Then we can speculate all we want. But there are legitimate questions right now about whether or not Mark and Jay Briscoe have actually wrestled their last match in Ring of Honor. So that's what I could say right now.
Interesting stuff. And, of course, coming off their big main event, like you mentioned, and also off of the retrospective 2 weeks ago, looking at the Briscoe family, where they came from, how they broke into the business, footage from their earlier matches in Ring of Honor way back in like 2002, 2003. Kevin, whose idea was it to air and produce that special? Because it was really well done.
Well, it's something that's been in the works for a long time. You know, some of that footage was shot a while ago. And it just, again, it's one of those things that we just wanted to find the right time for it. Mm-hmm. And knowing that, you know, once the announcement was made of the Best in the World main event, we figured no better time. So let's take this fantastic DVD that's out now and let's condense it down to 44 minutes and make an episode of television out of it. So so that's what they did. I thought the producers did an outstanding job. Chris Resnick and the whole team behind the scenes did an outstanding job of capturing the images of life in Sandy Fork. So it's, you know, again, it's a look. What you see is what you get. It's unvarnished. It's real. You know, they say that reality television is a work, right? Well, these guys are no – this is no act. This is how they are, 24/7, 365. There were 60 family members, extended family members, that came to Best in the World. And 50 of them actually bought tickets. We comped only 10, you know, and that's mom, dad,
right?
The wives, the, you know, the kids, I mean, the immediate family. But everybody else – aunts, uncles, cousins, people that live on or near the farm that are part of this big extended Briscoe family, they drove up from Sandy Fork and were there a part of it. I was part of the group at ECWA. Jim Kettner had done some training. My only regret with that show was that we didn't give Jim Kettner any credit, but that mm-hmm. may have been neither here nor there. But Jim Kettner was very responsible for the early in-ring training that Mark and Jay got as far as polishing them and cleaning them up and teaching them how to not be backyarders. But they were still teenagers at the time. So myself and the Haas brothers had the great pleasure of beating the holy hell out of them. And we had a lot of fun doing that. We started a riot with members of the Briscoe family. We handcuffed Papa Briscoe. We, you know, Russ and Charlie elbowed poor Mama Briscoe from the top rope right in the birth canal. It was one of the greatest days of my life. one of Kettner's regulars got his arm stepped on and broke. So we did a good job.
Nice.
But yeah, that was a lot of fun. And they were teenagers and just getting started. And it's great to see them now. And I only hope that.
Scott, you with us?
Yes.
Not sure if we lost Kevin. But good stuff there from Kevin. Hopefully he'll be back with us in a moment here. Talk about the Briscoe brothers. Also regarding Ring of Honor with Best in the World, as Kevin mentioned, was this a couple Saturdays ago, and we had a live blog done by Brett Carlson on the site. So if you guys are curious what happened on that pay-per-view or looking for some detail, you can check that out. All right, Scott, Kevin's back with us. We're on a different line now, so hopefully this clears up some of the problems we're having. But Kevin, we did have one more Ring of Honor based question here we wanted to get to. The decision to no longer air pay-per-views live. Tell us about that one.
Well, I think it's the absolute best decision possible, given the way technology exists, along with the way the Ring of Honor website is. Everybody thinks that Sinclair Broadcast Group is a broadcasting company. They're not. They own television stations. The television stations broadcast. Individual stations all across the country, they are the broadcasters. Sinclair Broadcast Group simply owns these stations. So it's not like they have a whole team of people that can go out and troubleshoot and fix and start tacking up towers and making things stream live, because it doesn't work that way. Now, they have technology, they have know-how, they have people who know what they're doing in place already. And for whatever reason, we just can't get it right. So instead of continuing to fight and hope and be told by people on the technical side that, yes, it's going to work, and then it doesn't work, scrap the whole thing. Because we're tired of putting on these great shows that people get to see 99.9% of, some folks 100% of without issue. Some folks are only seeing 80. Some people are seeing 50. Some aren't seeing any. So, you know what? Screw it. Let's just do them. Let's record them. Let's release them video on demand, accessible the next day. And this way, everybody can enjoy it. It makes the emphasis on the live event even more important, which I'm a big fan of. The only way to see these events live is to be in the building. And those people will have an advantage over the viewers at home. And then if you want to watch it the next day or whenever it's available, maybe it might be sooner. But I think at least for now it's going to be the next day. Then you'll have that ability to do so through ROHWrestling.com. And I'm not saying that it's because, well, how come some other groups can stream live pay-per-views perfectly and Ring of Honor can't? I don't know the answer to that question. Maybe it's because we don't have a great website. Maybe it's because something on the back end isn't talking to whatever. How the hell should I know? All I know is it going to work? No. Then guess what? It's not going to get in the way of the shows. I'm sorry. It's insanity. And if they can ever figure it out, then great. But we're not going to cheat the fans, and we're not going to, you know, make the fans pissed off anymore because they don't get to see what they're promised. And that's really all there is to it.
No, I think that's a shrewd move, Kev. I do. Again, the negative feedback you're getting on them aren't worth the trade-off. You know, so I think it's a smart move to have it just record. Now, are you still planning on the pay-per-views mainly going to be Saturday, air Sunday, or is it still going to be kind of a, you know, show-by-show basis on what day it's on?
I think it's, well, I'd say show-by-show basis, but I think the initial plan is air Saturday or record Saturday and broadcast Sunday.
Yeah, I think it's a good idea.
Which gives us enough time. Now, again, if we're recording somewhere, you know, on the moon or in Oshkosh or somewhere, and we can't get back in time, maybe it might be delayed a little bit more. I don't know. But as far as I know, the next one's in Philadelphia in September, so that should be pretty easy for us to get back and make sure everything's good to go for the next day.
Great. And now, how does this affect your TV recording, where you guys haven't gotten that far yet?
It doesn't affect TV at all, because it's two separate things.
Okay.
The instrument that record, or the instrument that would broadcast the pay-per-view, and what we record our television with are two totally separate things.
Cool.
All right.
So yeah,
kind of like that. Very. It's very old school. You know.
What do you know? Maybe actually sell some tickets.
Yes.
I love that. That's my favorite part of it, Scott.
Yeah.
Because the idea is the only way that you could see this event is to be there live.
Exactly.
So, Kev, what's your take on the on airing the pay-per-view matches on TV the week after, though?
Well, that doesn't bother me.
Okay.
As a fan, because I'm not giving away the main event.
Okay.
If I saw the main event, I'd be pissed. and I understand the argument against it. But at the same time, there's about 1 million folks watching the television show every week, and there's about 2,000 people watching the pay-per-view. So I think we need to kind of educate the fans along the way still to maybe order these events. So maybe that's why we're doing it. And I think the problems get magnified by the loud complaining of a few in proportionality to the rest of our audience. Now, I'm also of the belief that if one person is upset, then I'm upset. I'm upset with that too, but there are certain things that we have to do in order to make sure that our audience, our television audience, knows what's going on,
mm-hmm.
so that when they see television starting in a couple of weeks, they understand everything. And so that's the reason why we did that.
Well, I'll say this, Kevin, you know, and people can argue whether the decisions are good or bad with Ring of Honor and, you know, the way you explain things and the way we always read about it. It seems like there's at least always a logical thought process behind it. In that, you know, they take the fans and the business model into account. I think that's a good thing. I think there's no, it doesn't seem to any, you know, ever be any kind of knee-jerk decisions behind it.
No, and that's the thing. You know, everybody that's in charge, you know, Joe Koff is a really nice, outstanding guy. You know, there's not a lot of people historically in the wrestling business that you would want to have over to your house for dinner. Just because, you know, the whole family would have to take a shower afterward. But Joe is one of the nicest people I've ever met. And he truly cares about the fans, he cares about the wrestlers, and he is a fan at heart. So it's been nice to work for him, because you always know where you stand. And it's like, are the fans happy? Are the fans getting what they deserve? And when, you know, we kind of all voiced our thing about, hey, let's scrap this live business because it's just killing us. Joe was like, absolutely, I completely agree. So. And he had actually kind of said it first a while ago. Maybe we should think about not doing them live anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we think we can get it right. All right. Well, if you think you can get it right, but, you know, the people aren't really happy about this. And, you know, we think we can get it right. Okay, if you think you can get it right, get it right. We can get it right. So, yeah, so Joe's one of the good, he's a good dude, and I have no worries at all.
All right, so one more question here for you for Ring of Honor, Kev. This is from one of our diehard Ring of Honor fans and listener, Steve Willey. Wondering if you guys are going to reach out to any of the ex-Shikara guys, since obviously it looks like that company is in a little bit of either disarray or just maybe done permanently at the time. Any ideas with the roster there?
I would be surprised if it doesn't happen at some point, but I don't know if there are any immediate plans, put it that way. And I think that a lot of the Chikara guys are in that state of limbo right now. So I think there's a belief, maybe it's just wishing and hoping that everything kind of goes back to the way it was. Other people believe that it is indeed done, and they're moving on. The wrestling is banners, and that's it. So we'll see, but I would not be surprised if we see that happen, but it won't be right away.
Cool.
But some of those Shikara guys are amazing.
They are. We have a lot of Shikara fans that listen to this show, so yeah. I'm sure they'll be happy to hear that.
What did I say? I said that it's not happening immediately, so don't get your hopes up. Don't be putting words into my mouth.
They will be happy to hear that it may even be considered.
Well, sure. Yeah, of course.
Okay.
Well, but again, what is it that we're talking about? We're talking about bringing in top-flight athletes of a different style and a different genre. They've already been on our show. We've already presented them before. And
right.
The reason is because they're special athletes. We're always looking for something new and fresh and different and another style that the audience will appreciate. But as far as it being like a mainstay, a main part of the show, I would say that is not going to happen.
Okay.
Okay.
Interesting. Do you feel like the roster needs some freshening up?
Yes, I do.
I agree with you.
I do, too.
I no slight to anybody that's there, but I think that some new, young, fresh faces are needed. And I think you'll start to see that over the next few weeks of television.
That's good. And I also feel like Scum needs another bigger name to replace Steen. Like, I think Hardy is doing it. I think he's good. I just feel like the...
You mean like a longer name, like Michael Featherstone?
Yes, Michael Featherstone would be awesome.
I went to school with a Michael Featherstone, actually.
You know what I mean? Stop being facetious.
No, I swear, at St. Sebastian's.
No, I know that part may be true.
How do you know I went to St. Sebastian's?
This sounds like a place Kevin Kelly would have attended.
You super creepy psycho stalker, you.
Anyway, a bigger name star to replace Kevin Steen within Ring of Honor. I mean, I think Jimmy Jacobs is awesome. And, you know, Compton and Titus are entertaining in their own rights, but it seems like the star power within Scum.
How can you say, well, I understand what you're saying.
Okay.
Matt Hardy is not a bigger star?
No, I didn't say, I said to go along with Matt Hardy.
Oh, you said, Kevin, you said in, to replace Kevin Steen.
Yeah, and to go, well, Hardy was there with Steen. I like Hardy.
Yeah.
I've come a long way on Hardy, because 2 years ago on the show, I talked about how much I couldn't stand him. But he's really turned it around, and part of what you said about him helped me come around on him, and I thought he's been great in Ring of Honor in this role.
2 years ago, everybody felt the same way about Matt Hardy.
Yeah.
If you had told me 2 years ago Matt Hardy's going to be in Ring of Honor, I would have said you're crazy. But every time I see him, no matter what he says or what he does or how he pisses the fans off and how I got to hear it from all of them, there is a part of me that is very glad that I see a right-minded, happy, enormously talented Matt Hardy performing in a Ring of Honor ring. And I say that selfishly, personally, because I've known him for years, and he is in a much better state of mind than he was a couple of years ago.
I think it's a good spot to wrap with Ring of Honor, but we're going to talk more Matt Hardy shortly, because we're going to go all the way back to 1999. Kevin, last time you were on, we went through Fully Loaded, so we're going to pick it up here in early August 99. Scott, why don't you kick us off?
Okay. Kevin, of course, in early August, the biggest event that happened in pretty much all of wrestling was that August night in Chicago when the Millennium Man, and not Sid Vicious, made his appearance, and that was, of course, Chris Jericho. Talk a little bit about that night when he came out, what the reaction was backstage, his interaction with The Rock that night.
Personally, my favorite night in the company. And I say that because now I go back to it, and when Foley won the belt, that was really special. But I didn't know Chris Jericho at all, right? So my first meeting with him was that day in Chicago. And I basically told him that there were people in the company that didn't like him, and that he was going to hear a lot of jealousy, and he was going to see it, and just to be ready for it. So he goes out, and we finally pay off the deal, and he kills the promo, and he comes back through the curtain. Now, many times in company history, and I'm sure it's still done today, guys do something really good, and they come back through the curtain, and they hear a round of applause. Well, Jericho comes through the curtain, and the way the gorilla was in the Allstate Arena is you come down the steps and you are right there, but it's a big open area. Like, the gorilla position is right butting up to the end of the arena itself.
Mm-hmm.
So he comes down the steps, 2-3, pushes through the curtain, and he's walking, and he's still, you know, brisk pace. He's still, breathing heavy. The adrenaline is still flowing, and he just kind of walks in a straight line and winds up heading back towards catering. Nobody says a word to him. I get up and I start to walk. And again, I say nobody because of the mix of people that were there. And the mix of people that were there were a lot of guys that had been with the company for a while. Okay. And at this point, there weren't any friendlies in the company. And not everybody from the company was camped out at the monitor. So I say this, you know, there were probably a handful, 10, 12 guys tops. Some top names, and I'm not going to name any names, but some top guys. And nobody says anything to Jericho, so I kind of get up and I walk around the long way, and I meet Jericho over by catering, and I said, "Outstanding job, man, you killed it. Thanks. How about that reception when you came back through, huh?" He goes, "Yeah, I see that. Okay, so long as you see it. Good job." That was it. I just wanted him to know that I was on his side, and that I had been hearing, you know, nonsense a few weeks before. You know, because we air the promos, and then the guys start to chirp. Well, it's because they see their money going away. Because they know that Jericho's going to walk in, and in their mind, Chris Jericho's going to come in and take all the money. And none will be left for them. So, and it's one more guy on top of them. So immediately, they're going to push down one more spot. You push down one more spot, you're worth that much less money. So, of course, the chirping starts, but it quelled, it stopped, it quieted, you know, and he was fine. But there was some negativity towards him, and Vince heard some of it, too, from some top guys and some son-in-laws. But anyway, did I say that out loud? that was cool. I'd never forget that night. I go back and I watch that every once in a while just to put me in that moment, because that was like a peak experience in my life. It was really cool.
All right, now another guy you were friendly with at the time, of course, dating back to your time at Florida, was Billy Gunn. Do you think he got a fair shot in this solo run here? Did he ever stand a chance? Did he blow it personally, or do you think that the gimmick and the way they booked him kind of doomed him from the start?
That's a really good question. I can't say that it was an all or nothing scenario. Both a lack of faith and his own lack of confidence with some missteps along the way made his trek up the card a little tenuous as a single. I'll put it to you this way. I think Billy Gunn was too nice. I think if he would have stood up for himself more and been more of a taker, and what I mean by that is instead of giving so much,
mm-hmm.
if he would have just been a little bit more selfish, I think it would have boded well for him. Because, again, Vince sees everything in a fishbowl. It's like when he puts the glasses on, all he sees is television, okay? He doesn't see reality at all. So if Billy Gunn would have been more aggressive and more selfish and been on top in his matches more instead of always on the receiving end, Vince would have perceived him as a top guy. Do you understand?
Mm-hmm.
So it's weird that life in that fishbowl is all-consuming. And it certainly is it's a risk that you take because do you do what's right for business and what's right for the match and what's right for your opponent, or do you act selfishly and take? So that's it. But that was those were the contributing factors to the reason why I don't think Billy Gunn ever really got over as a single.
Okay, now another guy, another big personality that popped up because the second biggest show of the year was in his home state, and that's, of course, the Governor, Jesse the Boss Ventura, if you will, of course, a centerpiece for SummerSlam in his home state. How did the plan come about for him to get involved? You know, he hadn't been with the company in, Jesus, almost 10 years. There's rumors his level of involvement kind of bounced up and down. He was supposed to do a lot and then a little. So, you know, anything about that and your memories of him specifically?
I think that was one of those deals that was, like, with Vince. And Vince only. And it may have involved the TV forces, Kevin Dunn, et cetera, but I think it was mainly a Vince thing. Because there wasn't a lot of talk of it back in the office. Like, I didn't hear that from Vince Russo or anybody. They were mainly focused on the stories and the underneath stuff, and I think the whole Jesse thing was cool if it would happen, but I think the way they had figured it out, if it didn't happen, it wouldn't be a deal breaker, but it certainly would make a big match even bigger. So, when we met him, very nice guy, shockingly overweight for somebody who had looked so great in his prime. Huge drum of gut on him. Like, I have room to talk. But anyway, it really just surprised me. Obviously, political life is much different than wrestling life. And, but anyway, yeah, nice guy, did a good job, good piece of business. Everybody was happy. So, that was it. The highlight of my night, though, that night, was Vince Russo, and I'll tell you this story, but weeks before, because he knew I was friends with Billy Gunn. Basically said, why don't you come up with a match for your friend Billy Gunn? And so right there in front of everybody kind of in the office, I said, well, why don't you book him and Rock in a kiss my ass match? The loser has to kiss the winner's ass. Silence. Jaws drop. That's pretty good. So then I don't know whether or not they ever figured out who was going to kiss whose ass or how it was going to work. But anyway, the suggestion was made, why don't we get a fat broad? Then this way, when Billy Gunn loses, Rock says, all right, fuck her up. And then it's, you know, two-ton Tessie there, and he's got to kiss her behind. Ha-ha, right? Mm. Not quite as good as when, like, Kenny Smith made Charles Barkley kiss a real ass, a donkey. But anyway, so they sent Bill Banks, who I think still works for the TNA website. He was WWF.com writer, wrote for the magazines. Nice kid. They sent poor Bill out there to go find some fat fan and to drag her in and see if she wanted to do this. So they found some gross woman, right, who you see, of course, you know, she wound up doing it. Sweaty, sunburned from being out there all day. I don't know what was going on. They put stockings on her. They put whatever they could find. So anyway, so she does the deal, right? And I don't even know if they paid her. Probably gave her a little something. Anyway, so I'm at...
Maybe a free trip to catering or something?
Yeah, I don't even... No, I think they kind of kept her away from everybody.
Okay.
So a few weeks ago, right, we're at TV in Baltimore, and Silas Young is there, who tears it up on this set of TVs for Ring of Honor. Anyway,
awesome.
He says he's wrestles, you know, a lot in that Minneapolis, Wisconsin, you know, the North Center, the Plain States up there. And he says, I tell him the story, right? And he says, oh, that woman is still running around putting herself over on the indie. She calls herself Mrs. Ass.
That is awesome.
Incredible.
That's 1999. It's 14 years ago. She is still living off of this thing. I don't even know if she gets booked or she just goes to shows. But people still know her and remember her as Mrs. Ass.
You took care of Mrs. Ass, Kevin. It's all because of you.
That was Bill Banks. Hey, why don't you come up with an idea? That's my Vince Russo impression.
I like it.
Very nice.
Okay, so, yeah. Mankind. Why did he not? Why did he win that SummerSlam main event? Why did they go to push Triple H to Monday Night to win the world title? You know, one story is that Austin refused a job. The other is that they wanted Jesse raising the hand of a face. If so, why wasn't it Austin that got his hand raised? Do you know anything behind this whole switcheroo?
I think there were three layers to it. First is TV. This is when TV really started to take over. And again, the ratings pop and blah 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 blah. Why it mattered in the middle of August, I don't know. I would have thought, you know, November or May, of course, it's a sweeps month. Anyway, I think that was one part of it. There were discussions, conversations, negotiations going back and forth, and I don't know if it ever got contentious. And I can't say that anybody ever refused to do business with anybody else, but I think the decision was made. I think it wound up becoming a Vince McMahon call. So when all parties can't come to an agreement, you know, when we can't settle out of court, sometimes we have to go before the judge. And that, I think that's what happened in this case.
Now, it's amazing how this question fell to me. A lot of people think the guy that suffered the most collateral damage from that decision, as JR mentioned, was Triple H. Was he ready? Was he ready for this push to be the number one heel with the injuries and stuff, which we'll get to in a minute? Was it forced? What did you think?
It was his call. So I don't know whether or not it was forced. I think it was what he wanted to do. Mm-hmm. What did you cry? Did you shed tears?
You know, I got to admit, you know, I will be honest. I was a little pissed. I'm not going to lie. I was a little pissed, actually. Yeah. You don't have to be a mark to be mad. But, yeah, I was kind of hoping for the big moment. But, I understand your reasoning 100%. You know, you know, second biggest show of the year. You know, you don't want to go out on a Debbie Downer, even in the Attitude Era when, you know, nobody really cared about faces. Not nobody cared, but you could kind of blur the lines a bit and nobody would get upset. Couldn't they have just, on a side note, couldn't they have just kept the belt on Austin and just one more day and let him lose the next night on Raw? What was the point of Foley at all, really?
Maybe he didn't want to lose.
I knew it! No, I'm just kidding.
I'm just saying.
Well, they'd end up having great matches a couple years later, but we'll get there when we get there. But
yeah, but I think at the time, again, that was starting to become, you know... Steve always had like I don't know, but he had definite opinions about the who and why and what. Mm-hmm. And for whatever reason, that cast of characters wasn't fitting into the who, the why, and the what.
Hmm.
But injuries had a lot to do with that.
Right.
Did you feel the push in general was for it? Like, did you feel he had... Because at the time, I remember there being a lot of backlash towards him, and a lot of people felt he was being shoved down the throats, and that's fine. I know sometimes you got to push, you got to do the strong heel thing and do it. And he was everywhere, and I can't say he didn't earn it. He worked hard at the time. Did you think everyone was ready to accept him as world champion, or do you think it was one of the things where unless they gave him that belt until they did it, it wasn't going to work until they just pulled the trigger?
I agree with that. I think that there is some definite you've got to have it. You can't be half pregnant in this regard. So I would like to say that would be, you know, that was all the plan and we had this all figured out. But hey, Steve, this is what we want to do. And Steve goes, uh-uh. Why not? Well, for whatever reason. Whatever reason he might have given. And so that was it. So mix up, and then Hunter's up the next night. There you go.
All right, thoughts on the Undertaker-Big Show alliance and the change in Taker's character. I thought this was pretty cool stuff where Taker was kind of being his mentor and they're telling those crazy stories about leaving him in the desert. And I thought this was the first time they were actually using Big Show pretty well. Did you like where they're going with Taker's character, kind of getting him away from the devil ministry stuff and kind of making him more like a redneck in a way and what he'd become eventually? But did you like that alliance? Did you think it was a good use of Big Show?
I did, and again, they had invested so much in Big Show, and they were doing everything they could to try to get him over and try to get him, you know, right and running right. And, you know, the transition, I always liked the American Badass character that Taker was doing. I know some people that were purists didn't like it, but I disagree. And doesn't mean they're right and I'm wrong, or I'm wrong and they're right. It just means we have different tastes. But I appreciated the fact that he was willing to go out on a limb and take a risk and do something completely different, only to then be able to come back at some point to where he was, which is exactly what he did.
One guy who ended up leaving, Kev, and upset my PIC to a great extent, was Ken Shamrock. Why did he leave? Was he going to come back? Was he on hiatus? Was he taking a breather? He was scheduled to be at the pay-per-view, Unforgiven. Did he bolt right before? Was it planned he wasn't going to be there? And this match was scheduled pretty much until right before it happened. Why, if he did leave well before the pay-per-view, then why was the match? Was it still scheduled? Was
Who
it a storyline thing?
Him and Jericho.
Jericho.
I don't remember.
They did the whole thing where Jericho was beaten on him and he had the internal injuries. And then it was scheduled as of like the last week before. And then that night of the pay-per-view, they changed it to X-Pac and said Shamrock was hurt. So I just thought it was kind of weird that they left it on the card anyway. So I was just wondering if Shamrock like quit that week or if that was always the plan.
Yeah, I think he quit or something happened. So, you know.
Hmm.
I think that's what it was.
Any idea as to why he left? Was it just get back to the UFC, or was there plans for him to come back?
I don't know. I always thought he had an issue with drugs.
Hmm.
But
wow, never heard that before. Interesting.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know whether or not he was told not to come back or what. I can't speak to any facts at all. But it's like, why does a guy there and then not there? So. Maybe right, that had something to do with it.
Well, speaking of guys that were not there and then there and drugs, British Bulldog returned around this time. What were your thoughts on his return? Was he promised a world title run by Vince? That was always kind of one of the rumors out there as well.
Oh, who knows? I doubt Vince would ever promise anybody anything like that. But when he came back, he looked great. He's all gassed up. But, you know, that was the usual. And... So, yeah, no, I thought it was, you know, no, he was doing good, and I don't know what he was promised or what they said to him, but anyway. It's, I had to unplug my headset. Sorry about that.
No problem.
I can't remember what, so what, when did he come back, though? Didn't he come back earlier?
It was right before... Well, they had recorded that whole big sit-down interview that never aired because they talked about Owen and all that stuff. They had teased it. They never showed it. And then he came back, and he got into the six-pack. He cost The Rock the title match, and they put him in that six-pack challenge match.
And then didn't Rock just squash him?
A month later, No Mercy with the dog. Dropped him in the dog shit and all that stuff on Raw, and then beat him at the pay-per-view.
Ugh.
Did you think he had anything in the tank, or did you think that was best-case scenario for him anyway?
I don't know. I always think somebody has more than what they are given. You know, you thought so much of them to bring him back in, and they didn't pay him peanuts.
Yeah.
You thought enough to pay him this amount of money. So this is what you want for your investment? Was only a few years removed from being, you know, profit improvability meetings. We were so broke we couldn't afford to keep the lights on. So, I don't know. Was that keep him away from WCW, sign him away from WCW? Who knows?
Do you think there was a little nefarious means as far as trying to get back in the graces of the Hart family?
Yeah, I mean, that probably had something to do with it as well. None of that would shock me if that was indeed the case. Again, Vince always had that tremendous soft spot for the Hart family. And that's why eventually they let bygones be bygones and put it all away.
Mm-hmm. One of the biggest events of the year that took place to counter WCW was the launch of a second show. And that, of course, was SmackDown. Was that a good idea?
Yeah. I think it was. I mean, it's still on today. And at the time, we had enough guys and enough TV that it made sense. It was the... Also, too, if you hated Vince Russo, that was the reason why he wound up leaving.
Hmm.
Double the work and no extra pay. So,
wow.
Did you think it was overkill, though, the product at the time? Did you think it was going to hurt it?
Oh, sure. That type of thing is not sustainable under any shape, form, or fashion, especially when you hotshot TV the way Russo did. See, that exposes you. But if you build long-term and you can keep some matchups in your back pocket that you have that are fresh instead of writing TV week to week. So, what do I know?
Well, one of those early episodes of SmackDown was a very memorable one. Vince McMahon won the world title. A couple things on this. So what are your thoughts on him winning the belt? Did you think he returned too quickly from that stipulation where he was forced out of the company back at Fully Loaded? And did you think it hurt Hunter's credibility to have him lose the title that quickly, even though it was kind of a screwy thing with Austin involved to Vince like that?
It was... Purist would say, and again, I look back at that time, and everybody pines for the days of the Attitude Era. But when we were in the middle of it, there were just fans and writers and anybody imaginable who just regularly took hot steam and dumps on us for anything the company did, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this was one of them. Everybody's like, oh, remember the higher power, you know? How great was that? Y'all hated it when it happened. You know, Vince becoming the world champion. Oh, my gosh, everybody. Woo! You know. But part of it, too, was that Triple H finally got his. And, you know, so they stuck it to him a little bit. It was kind of a goofy joke. But at the same time, what are you doing? You're cheapening the world title. Woo, woo, you know. So that's actually the noise they made, too. Woo, woo, woo.
That's what they all sound like eventually.
Did you think it was a moment that was going to happen at some point, no matter what? Like someday Vince had to win the world title?
Put it this way. When Russo and I were at the A&W and we were talking about what to do for TV that week, and I had thrown the idea around there, oh, he should just challenge, you know, Austin should challenge him because he's seen the way he's strutting around with the belt around his waist and probably dreamed of being the world champion. Yeah, I think obviously that was to feed Vince's ego. Sure. That's what he always wanted. But he never would have been because of his father. His father was like, no. Ha ha, pal. I wonder if Vince Sr. sounded like that.
So like, Vince Sr. would never have given...
conversations around the, you know...
with Toots?
Toots.
That's Scott's
go-to
boy. Here's
a name
we
should bring back, right? That was a nickname, like, from, you know, vaudevillian era. Hey, Toots. Dun, 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 dun.
Are you telling me that Vince Sr. would never have made David Arquette a world champion? Come on. That's vaudevillian.
It's fraudvillian.
Fraudvillian.
You should make it a shirt.
We've coined a new word.
Yes, we have. Oh, you describe a lot of WCW in this 1999 stretch.
Yes.
And WWE.
By the way, if you ever would like to do a WCW look back, you must have Artie Evans.
Okay. Okay.
He is a historian of WCW.
Set it up.
What am I, the producer now?
I don't know him. You know him.
You're like Bernie from the Imus show.
Bring him to breakfast in Providence. We'll talk about it.
Awesome. Pancakes.
Now I got to come up. I had the lunch place all planned. I got to come up with a breakfast place. It threw me all off.
So to finish the question, because I'll ask this part of it, was Triple H's credibility stung by it or no? Did it not matter?
No, I don't think so. Because it was such nonsense anyway. I think the point had been proven that he was a top guy and could survive on his own with the belt. You know what
mm-hmm.
I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And live to fight another day. Maybe it was going back. Maybe Steve didn't want to blow through the thing with him and Hunter to save for this moment that eventually wound up leading to more business between the two. Sometimes the thing you don't do is better than the thing you want to do, especially when you say, if we don't do it now, can we do it later? And usually when you come back to something like that, it winds up being better than if you would have just shot your wad and done it all at once.
Hmm. All right, three words. You know we were going to get to it eventually. Kennel from hell.
The greatest single match in the history of WWF.
Fraudvillian, I tell you.
It was so good. Did you guys hear me and Mick recall that thing?
Yep.
Yep.
It was just tremendous.
What were your thoughts on the feud?
I wish I could say it was better live than when we recorded it, but no, it wasn't.
At least you didn't have to smell the ambiance.
I mean,
they're supposed to be intimidating. All we saw was shitting and humping.
And barking.
And barking.
And tags wailing. They're just wagging tails.
Yeah.
Hi, we're happy to be here. I'll give you the backstory on this. Another Russo brilliant idea.
Of course.
Only brilliant because, there wasn't the idea of, well, how are we going to get these dopey dogs? Where are we going to get them from? Where are we going to find, rabid, bloodthirsty pit bulls. And I think they left it to Kevin Dunn's longtime assistant, Sue DeRosa,
mm-hmm.
who usually was involved in the booking of, or at least partially in the locating of the Godfather Hose, this remote location to shoot this, again, this is nothing more than just a day. This is on my resume, right? What did you do today? Oh, I booked Godfather's Hose. I found some bloodthirsty, pit bulls for a match. Then I took lunch. So the idea of this, it was great in concept. It was poor in execution, but it did turn into being one of the greatest ribs ever mm-hmm. on another human being.
What do you think if they would have done, like, robot dogs?
RoboCop dogs.
Well, I thought if you could have brought in the greatest elements, you could have thrown in, you cover the dogs in Shockmaster's helmet, right? Then you have a RoboCop dog.
God.
Then you blow up Al Snow in a boat. You could have encompassed all of the mid-90s WCW right there. Leading
oh,
to me and Mick calling the match, of course, when he was Cactus Jack.
And right. I think one of them needs to also have the yellow mask on, be the yellow dog.
That's right.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
Honor Filman.
There was so much goodness in that match. Al Snow with the crimson mask. I mean, it never ended.
What'd you think of the feud? him and Boss Man. JR and I have said constantly, some of Boss Man's best work.
I loved it. I really thought it was tremendous.
You liked him feeding him pepper?
Yeah, because it was the first time where fans had really gotten to see Al Snow be, you know, perceived as at least somewhat of a top guy, sympathetic character, somebody you could care about. You know, you can't be funny all the time. You can't be serious all the time.
Right.
You have to go back and forth. And it's not that Al didn't want to, it's just that Al wasn't given those roles. So it makes me enjoy you more as funny after I see your, you know, sensitive side. So I thought it was great, and it just was another opportunity for Boss Man to just cut classic promos, you know.
I think it's refreshing, too, because in the era of the cool heel, Boss Man is just such a piece of shit doing the stuff that he was doing. I thought it was great. He's just a true asshole, you know.
Isn't it funny how it works?
Yeah.
Now, do you know why this match, how this all got done?
No.
Like the story behind the feeding of the dog?
No, tell us.
No.
Okay. This was Mr. Fuji.
What? What?
No, I'll tell you what happened.
JR's favorite guy.
I don't know when this was. It was many years ago. Mr. Fuji had a next-door neighbor who had a dog that liked to bark. Fuji would come off the road. He would be tired. He would, you know, dog would be barking. He would call or go over. Please, dog bark, please be quiet. Okay, yeah, sure, no problem. Dog barking all the time. Fuji goes back.
I don't like where this is going.
Please, mister, come on, dog barking. All of a sudden now we don't hear the dog barking anymore. Neighbors invited over to Fuji's house for barbecue. And that's where they got pepper steak from.
Oh, no.
Yes. Fuji fed the guy.
There you go, JR. Something about your favorite manager you never knew.
He just stepped up in my book. I usually think Fuji was kind of useless around ringside, but now this makes me think he's more evil than he was portrayed on TV.
That's how they got the story.
How did they never do that angle with Yokozuna? He was ready-made to eat dogs.
Amongst many other things.
You can feud with the British Bulldog. All right, Kevin, and a complete 180 here. Take us through the night that Draws was paralyzed. Do you think it completely derailed D'Lo mentally? Did it knock him off course? Because he was really on fire there in the summer. And then just kind of took a detour after that obviously terrible accident. Just memories that night.
Of course, it happened very early in the night. It was one of the matches that was originally taped for Sunday Night Heat. A spot in a match that should have never happened. At no time, under any circumstances, should somebody D'Lo Brown size be picking up Draws to do a running powerbomb. Whether it's, you know, jumping up from behind or in the latter stages of a match. Physics just don't add up. I think that a lot of people look down on D'Lo for doing that. Just from the prism of, There was sort of a knock on him to begin with because he was never perceived as a top guy, and this just cemented that, you know. And then there were questions about whether or not people wanted to work with him, that he was careless, that he was dangerous. Again, there was a lot of resentment because it was very... I don't know what's the right word to say it. A very avoidable situation. So, that was it. It just sucked. He's such a good guy, you know. And I think we did TV a few weeks later in Philly. A few weeks, a month, however long the time it was. And Dr. Tom went and saw Draws. You know, it was sad. It's very sad.
What's have you seen him or talked to him lately? Just. Not much out there on him. He's kind of been disappeared from the public eye for a while now.
Emailed with him a couple times, but not really too much else. You know, I always felt bad because his wife left him too. She wound up marrying Shannon Moore, which, neither here nor there. They're adults. But,
wow.
You know. Yeah, it sucks. So way to go, Debbie Downer. Let's go back and talk about Fuji.
No, we're going to talk about your best friend. Good old VR there. Obviously, him and his boy leave. Mr. Russo, Mr. Ferrara. head off to the South. When they left, was there a feeling that, oh, wow, you know, you've been kicking dirt in WCW's face for a few months now. Was there a feeling in the company now that, wow, this might be good for them? We might need to pay attention now.
No,
how much stuff had to be...
Not at all.
No. And how much stuff had to be switched around? Was there a lot of stuff that had to be switched around because when they left?
No.
Creatively?
No, it was just who's next. In the first week, it was me and Terry Taylor, and then Shane and Vince wound up rewriting it. There wasn't really, like, anybody who sort of did anything. So we just figured, well, we better get something down on paper. And so we presented it to them, and it was for that big TV in Atlanta that was coming up.
Mm-hmm.
I remember that was kind of one of – that would probably be, like, the biggest thing was just the size and the enormity of the show. But in terms of them leaving, no big deal.
Well, so because the perception on the outside at the time was that it was kind of a blow. You know, obviously that's the way they had always presented themselves, and it seemed like a big deal for WCW to pick them up. And the ratings even show it a little bit. I mean, WWF was still big, but WCW jumped up back into the mid-threes a little bit for a while there when we were kind of researching the reviews we were doing. So I think some of that was substantiated at the time. I just remember Russo, oh, wow, what a big deal. Again, Vince Russo, they're going to bounce back, and they're going to change the product around. And there was a bump due to interest, and that was very short-lived. But interesting stuff.
Yes, a bump due to interest. And then once they figured out what it was, they said, we don't need to watch this anymore.
No more interest needed.
Yeah.
Did you think it was a good thing for the company? Did you think they needed to – was it an addition by subtraction?
Yep, I do. Just from the, he was getting to the point of burnout and just needed to go away. So
you think he leaves if there's no SmackDown?
No, there still would have been SmackDown.
No, I'm saying if SmackDown never happened, do you think he would have still left?
Oh, yeah, eventually, but I know he was pissed about that.
All right.
So there wasn't any thought.
One show, one paycheck. Now two shows, two paychecks.
So that's weird. There was never a thought to put a second writing team together for the second show? They just dumped it all on him? That's weird.
Well, if you work for Vince McMahon, there is no tired, there is no sick, you know? So
true.
Suck it up and deal with it.
Mm.
And that's cool because you know where you stand. I always thought it was cool.
Mm.
Well, speaking of Russo, another one of his boys, Jeff Jarrett, what did you think of the whole woman abusing angle? What were your thoughts on Jarrett leaving? Did he really hold up Vince for money? And
yep.
Why did he really leave?
Well, he really left because they chose not to re-sign him. They let his contract lapse. Contract expired that week. Booked in the main event, or not main event, but in a big pay-per-view match with China, right?
Mm-hmm.
Jeff had him over a barrel. Now, Jeff had gotten his money cut along the way because he came in making X, promised, you know, big top-of-the-card guy, wound up being less than X, and as a result, had his money cut. So all he did was he just asked, well, he didn't ask. He said, I'll be glad to go on tonight and do this if I get back the money that I feel you guys owe me. And they said, okay, we'll get you a check. Hold on. And that was it.
You know how much it was?
$250.
It's not a bad payoff for one night, right?
Yeah. Wow, for getting just flour thrown in your face.
Do you think they should have told him to go screw and let him take the belt? I mean, at that point, would it have really mattered the way they were dominating WCW? You think they could have spun it?
Here's the reason why that Jeff Jarrett's contract lapsed. Abraham Lincoln was famous for the pocket veto, right? Billy didn't want to sign, put it in his pocket. Didn't you sign it? You only had 30 days. Oh, I forgot. It was here in my pocket. Oh, well, I guess you'll have to redo it. Next legislative session. Jim Ross was in charge of the contracts, right? He knew exactly when Jeff Jarrett's contract was set to expire. He chose not to do it. He chose to let it lapse.
Is it due to the Austin stuff?
Yeah, exactly, because of the Austin stuff. That's his boy.
Hmm.
Now, Jim Ross will never admit to that. He made a mistake. He, you know, it's a clerical error, blah, 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 blah. Please.
Do you think deep down though, Jarrett wanted to go anyway?
Yeah. I think Jarrett probably felt constricted by, you know, with the structure and the way things were with Austin there and never being able to get over that. And he certainly was not going to, you know, become bigger or more important than Steve in any shape, form, or fashion. So, yeah, he was only going to get to be so big. And, but again, getting quarter of a mil one night, not bad.
Let me ask you this, because Scott and I kind of had a debate about this when we talked about No Mercy. And you were there for his entire run during this stretch. Do you feel like he lived up to that promise at all when they first brought him back in late 97? And if not, was it on him? Was it on creative? Was it on the company? What do you think of Jarrett's run? What's your assessment?
I think Jeff Jarrett did everything within his power to work under the situation that he was in and make the very best of a rotten situation. He was promised the world. He came in unknowing that he was stepping into a situation he could have never possibly succeeded in. However, at the time, he did take a risk, and he left the guarantee of WCW for the belief that he wanted to get over in WWF. So, now granted, he had Vince Russo telling him that, you know, with Russo writing TV and Jeff being there, he could take care of some things and make sure his, you know, his boy was always right. But again, Vince ran into that stone wall of Austin. So Jarrett had to do what was right for him. I hold him completely not at fault for what happened that night and applaud him for the way he decided to go out and the way he conducted his business. And everybody who liked Jeff felt the same way.
Hmm.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
I know, right? I'm pretty amazing.
You are.
And, you know, at some point, I think the belief was, because everybody likes Steve, too, but I think at some point the belief was, all right, Steve, we got it. Can you let it go? The guy's done his penance for whatever you're pissed off about.
So he seemed to be the kind of guy that held a grudge?
He asks him knowingly. Yes.
Yeah, I think it's pretty well documented.
Yeah, he does. Not cool for a main eventer, but anyway. At No Mercy in Cleveland was the next evolution of what would end up being one of the most popular gimmicks in WWE history. And that's the ladder match. Your boy there, Matt Hardy, and his brother against Edge and Christian.
In the tit.
Get in the it? Tit. That's right.
The Terry Invitational Challenge.
That's right. Woohoo! Was that the Russo voice? That had to have been a Russo idea, right? what are your thoughts on the match and its spot in the legacy of the company and of the ladder match?
I remember Michael Hayes being all kinds of excited about this match because this match propelled him to the heights that he wound up achieving in his career as an agent and a producer and all those different things, because this was him putting this thing together from A to Z. Now, of course, Matt, Jeff, Edge, and Christian had a whole lot to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
But Matt, or only Michael could have produced that match out of the current crop of agents that were there. And at the time, Michael really wasn't an agent. He was still coming out of that Doc Hendricks role, but everybody knew and respected him. Everybody liked him.
but this was his coming out party. So all of them did fantastic in their roles. Except for poor Terry, if you think about it. When the event is named after her bosom. And she really wound up getting not a whole lot out of it.
I'd say Gangrelga hose too.
Yeah.
Yeah, well.
I hated that. I hated the new brood so much. Oh, it drove me nuts. Didn't seem to fit at all.
Who was the new brood?
The Hardys. That's what they called them, the new brood, when he managed them for like a month. It was terrible.
It was on TV like four times.
Oh, I don't remember that.
No, it was terrible.
I was there, and I didn't do drugs at all. And I can't remember any of these things. Not that I can't remember any of them, but like a lot of the little details, I don't remember.
Well, it's stuff we've watched or talked about recently, so.
Okay. Yeah.
But it's also, I also do, you know, remember things like, you know, the Fuji story. So there is some value to me being here.
Yes, slight.
Thanks.
You've changed JR's opinion of Mr. Fuji.
Yes, you have. And Jeff Jarrett. So the tit obviously worked well for Edge Christian and the Hardy Boys.
The tit, get it?
We tried so hard to try to make that a legitimate sounding question.
definitely a star-making match, all right? There's no question about it.
Absolutely.
Did they different go out there with that in mind?
Yeah, different than anything else that the WWF was presenting at the time.
Did they go into that match knowing this was their chance to make it?
Oh, yes. They knew exactly what was to be expected of them and what they could do. And that basically whatever restrictions they might have had put on them in prior matches or different situations, you guys are perfectly suited for working with each other, so get to it and make it good.
All right, skipping ahead to 2013, why does Vince McMahon now have Fred Willard's hair? Can you tell me that?
Well, you know, here's the thing. Fred Willard and Vince are separated. We're separated at birth. Long-lost Siamese twins, old-school Siamese twins from Siam.
He somehow got his hair back to the way it used to be.
No, corner. It's even more than it used to be. It's like, what you see tonight? It's like all poofy and brown. It's hot.
Looks like I'm Mohawk now.
Very weird. All right, Kevin. Why did they reunite DX, give Hunter the backup? Did you think it was time to break up Kane and X-Pac after they kind of dominated the mid-card throughout 99? Did you think it was a step back for Hunter to go back to the group?
I think maybe it was a couple of reasons. One, needed some help. Two, give X-Pac some better paydays. Make Kane a sympathetic character. Start to give him somebody else he could work with, potentially. And what else? I don't know. That's it. That's really all I can think of. I just thought it was the ever-changing whims, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, he's, you know, oh, we have to change him. We have to flip him. Why? Because TV every week.
You know, you can stop doing the voice. Wasn't Russo gone by this
He's
point?
Gone now. Is that how Chris Kresge talked?
I liked Chris Kresge.
When did he take over? Was it right after?
Not right after. Probably, I don't know, a month or so. Well, I can't remember, had he already been there? He was a good dude. Man, what a nice guy.
Yeah, we'll definitely talk a lot about him in 2000.
Okay.
And he really starts, forging his creativity.
Did you think the Outlaws, were they happy to get back to DX, get back to cashing those merchandise checks and hanging with the big boys?
Yes. Well, wait a minute now. How could they, did they turn them and were they heels or what?
No, they were just kind of back as a team, just kind of not doing much after the solo thing ended.
Yeah. And then they turned the night they came out and helped Triple H. So
was that the night with Mick? No, that wasn't that night, was it? With Mick and Terry Funk?
No, that was 98.
Don't get hot. You ain't got to yell at me. I can't remember.
I'm not lying.
Give me some more detail.
Hey, look, I'm not Rob Feinstein, buddy. You don't have to sit there and get all fucking pissed off at me. I'm just what is on here chatting.
This ain't our video.
What the hell? Not in the friggin' Biltmore hotel room. Chill out.
We're not sitting behind a curtain. Yeah, you know, there was like the X-Pac, DX had formed, but Kane and X-Pac hadn't broken up yet. And Kane, you know, X-Pac would tell Kane, you know, this is just a side thing. You and I are, you're my main priority. We're going to forge ahead and everything. And then he ended up turning on him.
That dirty, no good.
Yep. It was inevitable. What'd you think of that run?
Wasn't Terry involved in it, the girl?
Tori.
Something with the tit.
Yeah, something. I thought all that was pretty cool. Now I got it. Oh, man, right. Those two, Tori and Kane, they had such a cool dynamic. They had the whole Red Dragon thing. They were going to do this whole, like, serial killer thing. It was awesome. It was going to be awesome. And it never happened for whatever reason. So, what do you think about that?
I liked Kane and X-Pac. I do, and I liked Kane and Tori. I agree with you. I was kind of sad that they broke them up so quickly.
Yeah.
I think they just wanted another chick with DX.
Mm.
Oh, you think that's what it was?
Seems like it.
Mm.
Seems like they're trying to up the kind of slutty quotient. They can only go so far with Stephanie. So I think they wanted...
But I thought X-Pac was due to break out on his own anyway. It was tough to see him break up, but he definitely needed to be on his own.
Right. Right.
Speaking of tag teams, two guys whose names rhymed, but they didn't always have the best chemistry. Rock and Sock.
Oh.
And specifically, one of the most, I don't know if it still is, the highest rated, I want to make sure I said it right, highest rated
segment ever.
Segment ever. Yerpal the Clown, Poontang Pie, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. What did you think of This Is Your Life?
Well, for its excess, it was wonderful. I always felt bad for everybody having to follow it because they wound up going so far over their time that it basically caused the whole rest of the show to be, in effect, scrapped and matches were cut. And for that reason alone, but it was magical at the same time, you know, to see those two out there talk. All this nonsense and poor Mick trying to he just wanted Rock to love him. That's it. That's all he wanted. Yeah, it was awesome. That was a lot of fun.
I liked that whole storyline with the whole thing where him writing the book and he thought Rock threw it away and doing everything he could, like you said, for the Rock to love him. And then that promo where he finally snapped on him and just let loose. You could tell there was a little bit of truth in that, the stuff he was saying, because it was said with such conviction.
Right. I think the girl, I seem to remember, the girl didn't like some of what was said about her.
Oh, the teacher? The teacher? Oh, no. Oh, the Rock's first...
Yeah.
Big Slice? Yeah, her.
Like, she wasn't signed up for that.
She didn't look thrilled.
I feel like Mick, they really... You know, he was always funny, always really good with that stuff, but I feel like around this time, they really let him let loose with the comedy and show his chops, and I thought it really clicked for the first time.
Well, yeah, and again, after everything he had done physically.
Yeah.
So, it was well deserved, absolutely.
One funny throwaway, I was kind of reading the recaps of those shows. There was one where he got the shit kicked out of him, and remember Nurse Beebe was attending to him, and he was, you know, trying to say, oh, I'm okay, and then he sits up, and he sees Beebe in front of him, and he drops back down, oh, I'm hurt. So,
that's Mick.
Good stuff.
Bless his heart.
This Is Your Life got a lot of backlash at the time. It got a huge rating, but there were definitely a lot of, I remember a lot of backlash about it. Probably from
But again, retrospective now, right?
Yep.
Hindsight always 20/20. Oh, we missed the good old days.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
People took hot steam and dumps on the good old days when it was the now.
Yeah. That was definitely shit on quite a bit. And not just from the Bob Ryders of the world.
You know, he still has a job.
I love name dropping him every time you're on just to get you going.
Oh, my gosh. I heard his name today, and I was like, he still works there?
Yeah, he's at TNA still, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought so. Still writing for One Wrestling? Is that still around?
I guess.
And GeoCities?
Is GeoCities still around?
Oh, you would know. I don't know.
Poor Abyss.
RSPW? Oh. What?
We're going to get the official. You kind of teased it last time.
What?
Did we get the full Abyss story, Scott? I don't remember. I feel like you kind of danced around it.
Who, me?
Yeah.
I'm not.
I feel like you fandangoed around it.
Listen, I've gotten in a lot of trouble for telling that story.
All right. Over breakfast.
Okay.
May and Moolah. Speaking of interesting stories and creepiness, too much of this time. Did Moolah really need to win the title from Ivory? Did it matter? Another thing, they got a lot of backlash at the time. It was kind of funny as a one-off joke, but then it went on and on and on.
Those are my girls. I had the pleasure of driving them. Not all the time, but sometimes they drove with me. And you want to talk about being, you know, underneath the learning tree. I was pretty awesome. I was very down on the company and a lot of things. And I'll give you two reasons why, and I was completely wrong for feeling this way. They had launched SmackDown. I thought I was going to get the job, and I didn't. So went into the funk. Then Vince Russo leaves. I'm thinking, hey, I can help out with creative. Really didn't happen. Not anything I didn't do, just they went in another direction. And I wasn't down about that at all, but after those two things, I was like, well, I'm just pretty much on borrowed time, you know? And I was trying to think of, like, what's next. Well, obviously, talent development is next for me because that's what I really wanted to do. But anyway, so those two really kind of helped me feel better about things, you know, because it was so awesome being able to travel with them.
Kind of sad I missed the segue of speaking of eating dogs. Let's go to your riding with me and Moolah, but we'll move on.
We can clean all this up in post.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
Second half of the year also saw two big debuts that would kind of dictate. One would dictate for the next couple of years, and one would dictate for quite a number of years in the decade of the 2000s. Kurt Angle and Rikishi. Did you think Angle was going to be the star he was going to become? And did you like the direction they had with Rikishi early on?
Rikishi's name, the day of TV, was, I kid you not, Sumo Sammy.
Oh, my Lord.
Oh, that's horrible.
And I think it was only because they hadn't settled on what his name really was going to be.
Okay. So that wasn't going to actually be it.
Good. But that was it.
Oh, God.
So thankfully, it wasn't Sumo Sammy. Kurt Angle, did I know he was going to be a star? Yes. As soon as I saw him training in the ring in Stamford, weeks before his television debut, I said, okay, yeah.
Did you know he was going to have the personality he showed?
We already knew that.
Okay.
The biggest question was, would Kurt Angle, the amateur wrestler, be able to make the transition to top-flight professional wrestler? Not be good, not be serviceable, not be at hand, but be a top, top guy. And the answer was yes.
When did you know, or when did everyone know, when Austin was seriously hurt and would miss time? Did you expect him to be out as long as he did, and what was his mindset?
When was he out? Help me.
Well, he went out of Survivor Series.
And came back.
A year later.
In September. Except for the one shot at Backlash.
What was the injury?
This is the major neck injury.
The big neck one. The one that he had the scar in the front. And
I think it had always been kind of feared after SummerSlam, you know, when he got dropped on his head by Owen.
Mm-hmm.
Was that the cause of it? No, obviously not. But was it something that everyone had wished would not happen? Of course, one day we knew that inevitably that was what was going to happen, and we were there. You know, again, out a year was what we had heard right from the onset. So, yeah, it was not good. And I remember, you know, and then after each one, You know, because Benoit had it done. Who else had it done?
Edge.
Edge had it done. Each of the
Benoit
ones
have
were...
it done too.
He said Benoit.
Who?
Oh, he said Benoit.
Yeah, each one, it's like you just know it. And didn't Bob Holly too?
I think so.
Yeah.
Austin was the first, though.
Yeah.
Right. And it's funny because Kurt, you know, kind of came in and was almost sort of the unlikely kind of replacement for Steve at the top of the card, starting in 2000.
Did you guys think? Did you think you were going to survive it though?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we still had a pretty stacked lineup.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't like he was never coming back.
Right.
It was just a question of he's going to be out for quite a period of time. So, and what's he going to be like when he comes back? But Steve had been working hurt for so long. He had been working hurt for quite a while.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Everything happens for a reason, though.
Now, that, of course, led to one of the most, speaking of things that rankled fans, one of the most controversial things that happened in the fall due to this injury, and that was the bait and switch in Detroit at Survivor Series, where Austin gets hit by the Crown Vic, and when we had the change of the main event. Should they have just done it ahead of time? Should Austin have been hit by the car on Raw the week before? What did you think of that?
Hated it. Bad idea. But, again, it was the decision that was made at the time. And it wound up being Rikishi who did it, right?
Yeah, that was going to be my next question. Did they have any idea at the time where they may head with it? Probably not.
No, none whatsoever. Yeah. They write TV week to week, even after Russo left.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely don't think it was the best move. I don't know if they just chalked it up to arrogance at the time, figuring they were above getting any kind of backlash from it, but I didn't see the benefit of teasing up. And that was a major match to have those three guys lined up to face each other at that time.
The only reasonable consideration for not doing it was the fact that it was pay-per-view.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny, they made all these decisions to kind of bite the nose of pay-per-view, right? Despite its face. Hotshotting, giving away big matches on TV. But yet when it comes to something like that, pay-per-view is sacrosanct. We can't. We must, you know, protect our pay-per-view audience. And we shouldn't have not been taking hot dumps on pay-per-view matches for as long as you had been on TV.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you wouldn't be in that situation.
Why Big Show? Any other choices you would have went with? Should Triple H have just kept the title? Do you know what the original plan was if Show wasn't involved, if it was just going to be Austin?
I think it was just the idea of let's do something drastic to shake things up. I think so.
Mm.
Just to cause distraction so that people don't realize that we've kind of hosed them in this deal.
What do you think if they went with Test in that spot? Do you think Big Show was an odd choice?
No, Test was not ready.
You can argue he was better booked than Big Show at that point.
Yeah, but he didn't have the tools. He did not have the tools.
Mm-hmm.
So, and neither did Big Show, but
right,
Big Show was 7-1.
Why did they just give it to The Rock?
I don't know. Have refreshed my memory with all the moving pieces here.
Well, it was Rock, Austin, and Triple H was the match. Austin gets hurt. Last minute replacement is Big Show. Big Show wins the title. That's pretty much it.
When did Rock beat Big Show?
What
do you mean?
Who did they go? How did they get the belt off of Big Show?
Oh, Triple H beat him on Raw, like a month later.
At the turn of the new year, yeah.
And then we wound up going to WrestleMania and doing the four-way.
Yep.
Right.
I don't know why not Rock.
Were they waiting for, like, the big... Well, they ended up not doing it anyway, but I was assuming they were building to the big Mania moment for him, winning it back, and then they really didn't do it. So, I don't, you know. I mean, we'll delve more into that when we get to that part of the year, but that's what it seemed like.
Right. That is what it seemed like. I don't know. Was he doing his movies?
No, I don't think so. He might have been doing Mummy maybe at that point, but he was around. He was on every week.
Huh. Well, who was he working with?
Rock and Sock.
He was in a big-time holding pattern. Big time.
Yeah, he had nothing much going on. This seemed like an odd... I mean, I know they were probably just trying to surprise everyone, but to me, Big Show was just a weird choice, the way he'd been really... You know, he'd been in the stuff with Boss Man, which we're going to get to next. More Boss Man stuff with the Big Show. I want to know what you thought of that with all the Big Show's daddy and the funeral and the smash of the watch.
Oh, you big... You're, what do you call him?
You're a nasty bastard. Your mama said so.
I love that. Anything Boss Man did, I loved. So, yep, that was just him rolling off the hood of the car.
Yes. And the poem was the best, too.
Yeah.
You think Boss Man...
What was WCW doing at WCW about this point? What were they doing, like a two?
No, this is when they were in the threes, the mid-threes, I think. It's funny, I mean, when WCW, everyone shits on what WCW is doing, but at the time, they were doing better or equal to what Raw's doing now, that's for sure.
Scary, right?
Yeah. Yeah, where'd that other seven go, you know?
That's what I keep saying.
Yeah.
Where are they?
Long gone.
Mm. Getting back to a guy we talked about earlier, Chris Jericho. What were your thoughts on his progression as we got from, you know, his debut in August to here in November? Did he seem frustrated that he was feuding with China? And do you think already out of the blocks he was being held back?
Oh, completely held back. Absolutely held back. He couldn't work. He didn't know what to do. There was a lot of that. The haters were out in force, man.
Were you impressed with the way he carried China?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, it's quite a... They put a lot of good people around her. So, she can't ever complain.
And they gave the IC title out of that, so it's not like they were completely stifling him, right?
No, but... And again, I never have a problem with somebody being the Intercontinental Champion. I don't think, oh, he gets a world belt the first day he's in the company. But what are they doing? You're making, you know, is the world title, is the IC title now a stepping stone? No, not anymore. So what is it? What are we doing with it? Is it a throwaway? Is it a sideshow? Is it a prop? Or is it something of significance? Because they're paying Jericho significant money. So shouldn't he be doing something of significance? And I guess he was because, you know, China was important. So, but Jericho got his validation when he beat Rock and Austin in the same night and became the first undisputed champion. That was his legacy. So anything that had been done through 99, 2000, all of that went away when they did that for him.
All right, going back to Foley, around this time, there was, you know, plans for him to go heel, feud with The Rock, play up on all that stuff we talked about earlier. Then it came out that he was going to be retiring. The mental issues, you know, not able to, his memory was going, physically not there. Did you prefer to keep him face and abort that feud and let him go out the way he would go out? Or did you kind of want to see them pay off that Rock and Sock stuff? Because it seemed to be a lot of, so much build and so much legitimate feeling behind that feud. Did you think they kind of skimped on not having Mick have that last heel run?
No, because it would have been terrible. And here's the thing. You can't get heat on Mick Foley. Or Mick Foley can't get heat on anybody. He's too likable a person. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So it wouldn't have helped anybody. He wouldn't have been physically able to go the way he would have needed to go. It just was not, you know, it was just not, the timing was not right. So, yeah, while it would have been nice to pay off, it at the same time, the what it would have been probably would have been worse than the lack of payoff.
I mean, based on the story, Rock should have gone heel, but obviously you can't do that with Austin gone.
Right. That obviously would have been the best way to go.
So instead they had Al Snow go heel and basically step in for The Rock and feud with them with the book. And that was another big chance for Al at that point. Did you think he was kind of hamstrung as well?
Well, yeah. Well, because he wasn't, I mean, after Kennel from Hell, any hope of credibility or care was done. So, yeah, no, I don't think Al was best served in that role.
Now, the other big story building up was, of course, the Raw is Love, which was, of course, the wedding of Stephanie and Test. But, of course, that was usurped by the game. And, of course, he doped her up and drove her through the tunnel of love. And
Scott winced in envy.
I did. I wanted to be the one with the root. Never mind. Did this Seal Hunter finally is like the number one bad guy in the company? I mean, that's pretty badass what he did in that aspect. Do you think this sealed it for him?
Scott, you'll be glad to know that I was the one that pitched this idea.
You were a genius.
Thank you. Despite my urges to pencil in your name in the role of Stephanie. No. Actually, the way I had written it, because they had done like the concussion thing with Bulldog, right?
Yeah. Was that just to delay Russo's original idea?
What was Russo's original idea?
Well, I don't know. That's just a story that's always been out there, is that the reason they delayed the wedding with the concussion thing is because they wanted to, Russo left and they wanted to change and take some time to redo it.
No, because they used my idea.
Okay.
They rewrote it, but they used my idea. My idea was that somehow there would be yelling, screaming, whatever, backstage, and, you know, Bulldog swings something and accidentally hits Stephanie, right? Oh, my God, she's out, whatever. Test is there, and, you know, how dare you. Anyway, later on we hear that there's a wedding going on backstage. Are you kidding me? Camera's rushing, and then we see from behind as the show goes off the air, and obviously woozy or something, Stephanie, she doesn't look to be in the right mind. You know, the minister says, and I'll pronounce you husband and wife. And she says, you may be the happiest woman in the world. And turn, and you think it's Test, and no, it's Triple H. And he says, oh, you have no idea how happy you've just made me. Then, of course, all the fallout in the weeks to come with the, you know, the father now, and oh, my God, I can't believe you married Triple H. Test, sort of the jilted lover, blah, 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 blah. Eventually, Stephanie winds up standing up and says, no, screw all of you. I don't need any of this. And she becomes this strong woman on her own, blah, blah, blah. So anyway, they wound up taking that seed of the idea. So I write this idea up. I had this brainstorm. Actually, I was talking with my wife, who was a big soap opera fan, and so we started talking this out. So I go in the next day and send an email. It was an open submission policy at the time, and I send it to Vince and to Shane and to Stephanie and Kevin Dunn and whoever else. And Vince is the first one to reply, and he replies with three words, all in caps, that's great shit. I told this story before, so forgive me if I sound repetitious. But anyway, it was that idea that then they took and changed it around and made it the drive-in thing and roofied her or whatever it was. But the result was still the same, that Vince, you know, Test, the jilted husband, jilted groom, Vince's worst nightmare comes true. But Stephanie winds up kind of digging it. So, and little did we know that those two crazy kids would actually fall in love because of it.
All because of you, Kevin. Again. Rewriting history.
I should have just written Scott's name in there and taken the lumps.
You led to the McMahon.
What am I supposed to do? Every week I got to have a title match change on TV. Vince Russo, you don't even work there anymore. I don't care. That's all I got for impressions.
You you led to the wedding of Stephanie and Triple H in real life, and you also led to the long career of Mrs. Ass. So you've quite the banner few months here in 1999, Kevin.
Yes, you have.
I'm like my own cottage industry. Look at me.
You led the two dominant females in the business. did you think Teska hosed in all this? Do you think he had what it took to become a top-level face? Because you're kind of looking that way, and then all of a sudden we turn around and he's hosed.
When did he beat Regal for the European title? Was that in, like, February of 2000, or was that later?
No, that was way after, because Regal doesn't even come in until the end of 2000.
All right.
He does all the TNA stuff after this. Well, he does nothing for, like, 2 months, and then TNA starts. The good TNA, not the bad one.
Why didn't he get a main event program out of this whole deal?
Right? I mean, you'd think he would at least win it. This is why I thought maybe they should have put the title on him. And then you have Triple H say, oh, I'll... Honestly, I think maybe they should have had Test and Vince's spot at Armageddon. And you say, you know, Test is your champion. And Triple H says, yeah, I'll annul the marriage if you put the title on the line. And then Steph screws Test, gives Triple H the belt, and keeps the marriage.
See, why didn't you write that?
Pay me millions! And then I'll go to WCW.
And you'll talk like this.
I'll talk like Sweat Hogs.
Sweat Hogs, huh?
Boy, that's a dated reference, Scott. I'm sorry.
I did that. Well,
Porky's? What the hell are you talking about?
Porky? No, isn't it? It's older than that.
We'll see.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Porky's. I mean, Scott, I'm the same age as you, or a little younger, right? Or a little older?
Don't admit to that, Kevin.
Well, no. I mean, I've been in wrestling now 22 years, so I can admit to that.
Yeah. Horseshack.
How old are you, Scott?
40.
That's it?
That's it. He sounds a lot older, doesn't he?
But I look a lot younger, don't I?
Yeah.
All right, in any event. This is the eHarmony of wrestling. I'm trying to get back into the marriage.
We right, chipped so, in and got him the blow-away diet for his birthday, Kevin.
Oh, my gosh, yes.
Buddy Rose.
All right, a couple more here.
Okay. Armageddon in Fort Lauderdale. Of course, no one gave a crap about the Triple H Vince match or the Big Show squash. All they cared about was Kitty and the little kitties.
And
or the big kitties, depending on your point of view. What was the thought process behind actually saying to her, okay, you're going to let loose the girls tonight? Was she in favor of it? Did she want to? What was that all about?
Oh, hell yeah, she wanted to. You kidding me? She didn't need any help. Straight freak.
Was she with Lawler at this point?
What?
Oh,
was
yeah.
She with Lawler?
That's why she came in, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, okay, I thought so. So she didn't have to have her arm bent. You mind taking this? Sure.
We haven't even suggested it yet. It's fine. I love it.
What was the odd timing, you know? Russo leaves and that kind of stuff was tapering a little bit, and then they do it. It seems like something Russo would have done.
I don't know. Yeah. Oh, obviously, definitely something he would have done. But...
Yeah.
So, yeah. I don't know. That's we had a little bit of that at Best in the World.
I saw the quick clip on CW28 here in Providence. Of course.
What did they show, by the way?
Pixelated. The matches or that part? You mean?
That part.
Yeah, it was. They showed a quick and kind of cut away, and it was pixelated. And then they did the same thing with Taven's ass. Was all pixelated.
That didn't even need to be pixelated.
Well, either way.
There wasn't a whole lot of ass hanging out.
I don't know. They never turn around, but even you could kind of see they had it kind of blurred a little bit.
That hoopla hottie was topless.
Yeah, at first I thought they just like took her top and she had a bra on, and then I got the full view, and I was like, whoa.
They had aggressive electrical tape, I would say that.
That was, what do you think of Taven?
I think the best is yet to come for him.
Okay. Why, seems a little little deer in headlights sometimes, right?
No, I think the only bad thing is that he's a little bit overshadowed by the hoopla.
Yeah. But I feel like we needed to get to know him more before they did that. I feel like they turned him too quick, you know?
Well, maybe, but that was, again, part of the story is the reason why. So.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I agree with you. I think there's something there. Just seems like he's knocking on the door. That's all. Not a foot in there yet.
Well, he's a little one-dimensional, if that's what you're saying, because we don't know him.
Right. I feel like we know him. Well, yeah, I think you're right. You're right. He's just overshadowed. We know more about Truth. We know about the Hotties. We don't really know what motivates Taven yet.
Right. So we're starting to see that.
Okay. All right, next to last question here. What did you think of Steph's turn, and did you like Vince and Shane as the faces here for a change?
Yes, I did. And I was a little bit troubled. I remember we did TV in Tampa, and I was a little bit troubled with the Steph Triple H show. You know? And I think was that in December?
The one where they, because the night after Armageddon, Vince and Shane were gone, and they took over.
Right. Yeah, that was, I remember not being too happy that day. I don't know why. Not that it affected me, but just I remember being like, ugh.
Did you like the role reversal, though, with Vince? Did you think he was pretty good as a face in the stretch?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And the more you did with Vince, the better. Love Shane, you know. I think Hunter got hurt in that match, by the way.
Who wants Vince?
Rehearsing it, believe it or not.
Wow.
Little known fact, wrestlers never rehearse. Right? Remember they did that stupid Triple Tower of Doom cage match?
Yes.
In WCW? I think somebody took a big bump off of that and got hurt.
Canyon.
Right. Same deal here with Vince and Triple H. Whatever the big climactic moment in that match, they walked through it, rehearsed it the day of, and Hunter got hurt doing it. So gutted it out, had to, you know, find a way through it. And again, guy's tough. Not a pill taker at all. Never was. So, never seen him drink anything other than water. But, tough bastard, because he gutted out, I'm sure, a lot of pain.
And like we said, instantly the top heel now, and all of a sudden, just a ton of heat after the wedding. You know, just all of a sudden, it clicked, I think.
Right. So, even though Scott was, I'm sure, you know, it was bittersweet for him. Let's just say that.
Yes, it was.
Like the taste of the spewed water from the mouth of the game. It was bittersweet.
And it wasn't... Never mind. So if you had to come up with, say, three guys, or girls, that were the MVPs, we'll say three, because it could be many, but if you could think of three MVPs of the calendar year 1999, and your thoughts heading
year.
Into 2000.
I mean, obviously, Mick... from the whole comedy standpoint, he was one of them. I would say Test really. I always look at the guys you don't expect a lot out of, but they step up.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Test was somebody in that regard. And I mean, you got to say Triple H because of what he was able to do. I mean, that was like the biggest. Stories of the year, I think. And then what we eventually wound up seeing with the Hardys and Edge and Christian, you know, as far as like one match, one moment in time, were you there when, do you remember the night when they had the first, you know, of these tremendous TLC matches do you remember where it was and where, you know, when the first time you saw Matt Hardy and Edge and Christian and Jeff Hardy, blah, blah, blah. But I would say that at the top of that list were those three.
What about X-Pac and Kane?
Eh, They did pretty good. When did X-Pac Heat start?
I was in front of the years, at least.
Yeah, a couple of years.
Okay.
Yeah, he was really over in 99. The fans loved him in 99. All that,
they did, huh?
He was humanizing Kane and all that stuff. Mm.
When did the Main Street Posse come around?
That was this summer.
Well, they're obviously the MVPs.
Yes.
Of course.
Well, the sweater vest and the music were, that's for sure.
Well, that guitar.
Love that song.
That was really just complex, deep.
All right, Kev. And thoughts of heading into 2000? Did everyone was feeling good?
I was starting to get a little worried.
Really?
I thought I was going to get fired.
Oh.
Oh, the company was in great shape. I was feeling too good. My stomach hurt a lot. But, no, everything was cooking, man. Everything was doing really well.
All right, Kevin, speaking of doing really well, you did really well tonight. We want to thank
you. Validation. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us.
I apologize because sometimes my memory on, like, I remember little details. I remember, like, you know, Sumo Sammy, you know, is the original name for Rikishi. But I can't remember, like, big main event matches from Raw because it all sort of blended into, like, one match.
No, it's a lot. And, you know, Scott and I, again, we do these shows every week and we're talking about them and I read all the recaps and we're watching shit. So we're, you know, it's different. You've lived through a lot since then wrestling-wise. So
I've lived through a lot.
You and Scott have seen many years. You guys have seen many years. Many years combined. So, yeah. But it's okay. You provide us with way more information and gold than you would
expect. Great job again, as always.
But I do need to ask you one last thing, Kevin. We had an exclusive interview with Glenn Ruth last weekend.
Yeah.
The great Glenn Ruth. He had a lot of nice things to say about you.
Yes.
Well, that's good. He's a good guy.
He was. We were scheduled for a half hour. We went an hour and a half, and it was probably about hour 15 of him telling awesome stories.
Yes.
Great memory, speaking of memories, was on him. But when we talked about how we talked to you and we're best friends with Kevin Kelly, we told him, and he said, "Can you do me a favor? Just ask Kevin, you know, maybe put the word in, get the Headbangers back in Ring of Honor."
Well, I think that if the Place to Be Nation gets involved,
okay,
mm-hmm. and they can start the rallying cry.
Get a little write-in campaign going?
I think so. Let it come from the people. Because if it comes from me, then it's the same thing as before when it was, Cornette kind of pushing them.
Okay.
So.
All right, Place to Be Nation. There's your rally cry. You know, Glenn Ruth gave us tons of information. He was a gracious guest. Helped plug the show. Show him a little love. Let's tweet out to Ring of Honor Wrestling. And let's get Glenn and Chaz back in the business. They're working the indie scene right now. Glenn said he's in the best shape of his life.
He really is.
Yeah.
Seemed
happy.
Holy moly.
Yeah.
He was well over, I know he told you guys, I'm sure, he was well over 300 pounds.
Yep.
He looked better than he did when they were on top in 97. So.
It's cool, too, because that was one of my favorite interviews that we've done, because I didn't know what to expect. I just messaged him on Twitter, and he said, oh, yeah, I'll come on. And I really, you never hear from the guy, so I didn't know what to expect. I was just blown away. That was one of the most fun times, non-Kevin Kelly division, that I've had with an interview on this show.
Non-RJ Brewer?
Yeah. No. counting all of RJ Brewer's appearances as one. Fucking guy.
Well, yeah, good dudes, man, both of them. And, hey, listen, I'd love to see him back.
Okay. Yeah, we will definitely who the hell is this on Raw? I think it's – is that Kelly Kelly with red hair or is that someone else? I don't know what's going on. Some chick with red hair. Anyway. Hmm. All right, Kevin Kelly, thank you. We'll talk to you in a few weeks, and I will see you in a few weeks as well.
Hooray!
Woo. We'll be right back. Take a quick break.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What I'd like to have right now!
Chad, do you ever feel that the world revolves around WWF?
I think you mean WWE there, Barf.
Yeah, whatever, but what about David Crockett?
Well, what about Jimmy Valiant?
I'm gonna get y'all until I get you, Paul Jones. Ooh.
The Four Horsemen.
We are a family, and we are the best.
The Omni, the Dangerous Alliance.
Please welcome the newest members of the Dangerous Alliance, Arn Anderson and Larry Zbysko.
Jim Cornette and the Midnight Express.
The Fantastics are putting the U.S. Tag Team title on the line against the Midnight Express.
Main events with actual work rate in them.
Woo! 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 All right!
It's just not fair to Flair.
It's not fair for Flair.
If this is what you're looking for, please check out Where the Big Boys Play podcast, the only pure NWA and WCW supercard podcast out there.
While you were in Hollywood making movies, Thunder Lips, I was winning world titles.
So a guy from across the pond and a dude from the south, Where the Big Boys Play. It's a great podcast. Harvard Chat are awesome. Check them out. Also check out WrestleChat.net, indeed where it's at. Great message board, plenty of topics to browse, the Still Real to Us podcast, and much, much more. Also, our message board, which is awesome, Bigelow34.proboards.com. It's where PTB really began. Written reviews and a boatload of them in PTB Nation. We have you to thank for that. Plus the territory wars, a whole lot more. If you want a one-touch spot for our show, you can head there. Also head to Stitcher.com and the Stitcher app for all phones and tablets, and more details on that. Also our good friend Graham Cawthon, historyofwwe.com, the best research site you will ever find. Also, another sponsor to the show, the Wrestling Forum, twfnews.com, their wrestling forum, a blog site, much, much more. The guys at TWF creating a wrestling media nation, many blogs, podcasts, vodcasts. Yours can be included in the official forum of WrestleChat.net and the place to be. We've joined up as well. So check them out, find out what they're about at twfnews.com. Also, you can check out our show at GetThePointRadio.com, my good friend Mike. It's a great online radio station. Not in the mood for wrestling, but you want to listen to music, pop it on. He plays music all day long. But you can also check his archive on iTunes, and all of our shows are there as well. Big site.
This is legendary ring announcer and WWE Hall of Famer, the Think, Howard Finkel. And you're listening to the Place to Be podcast.
Come on, everybody, get up off your feet.
All right, Nation, we are back. Hope you enjoyed that chat with Kevin Kelly. Scott, that was a great as always. Kevin always brings the info for us.
Yes, and a lot of questions answered because as you and I have documented, these last six pay-per-views of 99 have had a lot of mystery and intrigue, and he answered pretty much all of them for us. So kudos to K-Squared, as always.
Yes, and while we have you here, just want to quickly, again, touch on placetobenation.com. We had a huge week last week, Scott. Mm-hmm. We made the Wrestling Observer Figure Four Weekly update three times last week. Two of them were obituaries written by Chad Campbell, profile pieces that were fantastic. One was on Jackie Fargo, and the other was on Matt Bourne. Both passed away this past week, and if you haven't read them yet, do yourself a favor and check them out. Chad did a great job looking back at their life and their career. Got kudos, in the updates from Meltzer, and we even got retweeted by Jerry Lawler on the Jackie Fargo one, so a lot of traffic came in there. Also, Callum Leslie broke a major MMA story about the pay scale in the UFC, and we got linked by ESPN, we got linked by Yahoo. We pretty much broke the story on the site and got a lot of play on that. So Place to Be a Nation really kind of taking storm here just a few weeks in. And if you haven't visited, you should, because there's a lot on there for you. There's sports, a lot of TV stuff. Mm-hmm. Josh Richards' movie review of Ready to Rumble was quite the read, and he has a big recap of the Wife Swap episode of Roddy Piper and Ric Flair coming this week. And his take is going to be an interesting one because, he's made it clear before, he's a wrestling fan at heart, but not really a fan. So he's going to have a completely different perspective on this, which should be interesting. And also we have, of course, the show recaps every week. Your Raw is up that night. We have Raw, SmackDown, mm-hmm. Impact, Main Event, Ring of Honor. We've mm-hmm. also had pay-per-view live blogs that have done very well. Chad Campbell did the Chikara one. We had Brett Carlson doing Ring of Honor iPay-per-view. Chad did another indie show last night. Was it Anarchy? I forget the name of it.
Revolution...
Absolute Intense Wrestling, iPay-per-view, okay. Absolution 8. He did the review for that. Of course, we have all the podcasts Where the Big Boys Play. We have Kings of Sports. We have Off the Top Rope. We have Grapple Talk and Grapple Talk Rewind. And, of course, the Place to Be podcast, all streaming right on the website. We have a very intense and a very great group of writers. If you're into the NBA, you must read all of Andrew Reich's pieces. He did I like that, Reich's pieces. He did a great draft preview that was more in-depth than anything you'll pay for anywhere. Yeah. He also has a recap up there, and he's doing some free agency stuff as well. So a lot from Andrew. What else am I missing, Scott? I'll be live blogging Money in the Bank. We'll be doing that in a couple weeks. I'm going to have the crew here, Richard Flanagan and Mr. Jim, be in the house. So I'll be doing a live review as the show is going for you. That's something we're really trying to do more of at the site. We're going to do it for TV, and I did the Bruins game and just different stuff like that. We're going to try and do live blogs and incorporate your tweets and posts in there as well. Jordan Duncan has a great piece up today about Little League, people you encounter at Little League games, which is really cool, the different kind of parents and supporters. Yeah. He did a great job with that. Really entertaining. Scott, you got your James Bond stuff up there.
Mm-hmm.
Jeremy Nichols with his video game pieces, and he's doing a Friday the 13th look back as well.
Yes. That's going to be very good. I'm looking forward to that.
And also, we're going to be reposting, Scott, now for the first time in a while, the new eyes on these are pay-per-view reviews, kind of what got us going with all this. If you enjoy the Vintage Vault audio version, you're going to get to read them as well. And the cool thing that we're doing here is you get to read the review on the site. And at the bottom, we have linked for you to stream the actual podcast Vintage Vault episode. So you don't even have to go looking for it. It's right there. You can stream it and read the review at the same time. So we're going to be posting those once a week for you, plus our full archive available. Josh Richer also did a piece on Dexter and True Blood, which debut coming up this summer. So just a lot of cool stuff for you. I mean, everything you could want in pop culture is there. Also, Scott, big announcement. Thursday with the 4th of July, we are launching a pop culture desert island tournament. What this is, we've taken all different categories. We've taken magazines, video games, wrestling, sports, big events, games that you play, all different things. So we narrowed it down to 64 entries, music, movies. And what we're doing is we randomly pair them off, and we're going to have a tournament to decide what is the one pop culture item you would want with you on a desert island if you were stranded there for the rest of your life. So we're going to have four matchups every day starting Thursday. So be sure to visit. You can vote right on the site, and you can go over to the Facebook page to comment. So I think that pretty much sums up the website, Scott. Anything you wanted to cover?
Well, it's awesome. I mean, we got so much stuff. The gamut is run. We got a lot of stuff coming up this summer. Particularly our college football and NFL stuff is going to be amazing. We're going to work really hard for it, and we don't favor anybody. There's going to be no slanted ESPN-esque kind of things, but we're gonna just load you up. You're never going to not want to see it on a daily basis. We don't take a day off at all, so just remember that you can poke on every day, and there'll be something new for you.
Yeah, that's the best part about it. Yeah, we update all. You know, we're updating three or four, sometimes five pieces a day, whether it's written or audio for you. And like Scott said, we'll do a lot of football stuff as we get to football season. It's kicking off in late July, early August. We'll have a lot of college, and then we're going to really kick up the NFL previews with each team starting in August as well. So, all right, so let's wrap up. We're going to be back tomorrow night. Graham Cawthon and Shaq Campbell in the house. We're going to look back at
Graham
the first.
Graham Cawthon.
I know, right? Been a while since he's been on. We're going to take a look at the first half of pro wrestling here in 2013, all the promotions and what's hot, what's not. If you have any thoughts you want to share on the Facebook page, please do so. And we can chat that. Next Monday, we have Royal Rumble 2000. And next Wednesday, we have headlines, Money in the Bank preview. Starting tomorrow night, we'll be back with trivia as well. None tonight, but we're going to pick back up tomorrow night with the rest of round one commencing. So, with that said, that's Scott. I'm Jess. We'll talk to you tomorrow night. Graham and Chad in the house. In your house tonight.
But in your house. Is Stephanie Wynn coming on too?
In your house. You just won the house. You won the house. Who's paying the taxes? Who uses a machete to cut through red tape with fingernails that shine like justice and a voice that is dark like tinted glass? She is fast, thorough, and sharp as a tack. She is touring the facility and picking up slack. I want a girl with a short skirt and a long, long jacket.
would they